afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of September 18, 2016. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, executive editor at Information Week, and I'm joined this week by one of my favorite panelists for Information Week Live. We have Information Week editor at large, Charlie Babcock. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Well, Kurt, it's good to be here with you again.
Well, you know, we're getting together virtually in the middle of one of the two seasons when the computer industry, the tech industry, tends to get together in person. And it seems like spring and fall are the two big times for our industry to have conferences and conventions, and this year is no exception. Now, last week, one of the big conventions going on was Oracle Open World out on the West Coast. Since you are one of our West Coast editors, did you get a chance to stick your head in the door for the Oracle conference?
Yes, from where I sit, you can practically toss a stone into the center of that conference that was held at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. And I believe the usual crowd of 38 to 40,000 turned out. They had closed down Howard Street and used the center of that block as part of the show venue, which is not a common occurrence in San Francisco. It represents a major commitment to a big show, and Oracle Open World, year after year, I think, is the biggest held here. And so there was a lot of news, particularly cloud-focused news, and I spent as much time as I could collaring some of those Oracle customers to see how well they're faring.
Well, let me ask about that. In a year where it seems like we're just seeing a continued march toward the cloud, is that the direction that everyone seemed to be going? Or were there some other bits of news and centers for excitement happening for the users who were all there at the Oracle do?
Well, you know, some of them are probably waiting for the next big event that occurs here, and that would be Dreamforce, held by Salesforce each year. Salesforce and Oracle customers overlap, but that's not certainly something that gets talked about very much at Oracle Open World. Oracle Open World is about the effort to move the Oracle customer base to the cloud, to software as a service, the many Oracle applications available now as a SaaS, to Oracle infrastructure as a service. This year, special emphasis, claims of competing with Amazon Web Services. That's an ambitious statement, but that's what they want to say. And then some services that they offer under kind of the rubric of cloud, identity management, identity cloud, and things like that. So you have a very wide variety of services now out of Oracle with the cloud label attached. In general, the customer base has been refocusing somewhat, perhaps shifting gears from the days when Larry Ellison at Oracle used to say, don't pay any attention to the cloud, to today, where the cloud is. It's in the product name. It's in the headlines. It's in the highlights of the conference. It's what they want to talk about, and they want to move the customer base into a cloud-based set of subscriptions, software as a service, infrastructure as a service.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about the cloud, because one bit of news that I saw coming out of this conference and also tying into Dreamforce, which will be coming up, is a partnership between Oracle and Salesforce.com with the move to cloud. do there seem to be more of these partnerships going on?
Yes, people have gotten over, maybe it's an old story in the computer industry, but after a while, vendors get over the fact that they're going for world domination, and they go for as much business as they can get through cooperation or coopetition even. But Salesforce and Oracle continue to compete head-to-head on customer relationship management, but I think it's generally understood that the Salesforce customers are not going to be dislodged, and Salesforce has already won that fight. So more cooperation between the two camps is probably an order and something that we're going to see. But I was a little surprised. In general, the Oracle customer is someone who is dabbling, is experimenting, is pilot projecting, but is not yet fully committed to the cloud. I talked to one who was, and then I talked to one who was caught on the fence, betwixt and between, trying to figure out how to get there, having decided that he wanted to get there. And so between those two customers, it seems to me I heard from the kind of the two poles of opinion. One was Patrick Benson of Club Corp, major operator of country clubs, 209, I believe, plus they provide services to additional country clubs that they do not own. And so they wanted systems that could pull together kind of a diverse grouping of former club ownership companies into their company and then get them all to use one system. And cloud computing, Oracle software as a service is a very good fit there, and it becomes a unifying factor for them without needing to go in and re-architect every site. Instead of redoing existing systems, you're switching people over to a common system, which is a little more manageable. So he had been the first implementer of Oracle Financial Cloud when he was at Ovation Group, a group of restaurants that had buffet in the title, like Country Buffet. And he left there and went to Club Corp, probably with the express mission to convert them off of a bunch of dissimilar systems onto the thing that he was experienced with, the Oracle software as a service and Oracle Financials in the cloud. So he's done that. He's in the midst of it, but it was fun talking to Patrick Benson at Club Corp as he explained how you go about doing that and some of the hurdles still to go.
Well, you know, I'm interested to hear you talk about the hurdles, because in one sense, you would think that at this point, you know, more than a dozen years into the cloud revolution, that we'd have most of those issues taken care of. But it seems that every company, especially the large companies that want to move to the cloud, they still come up against all of these issues. When you talked to the people there at Oracle, did it seem like performance was the major thing? Are they still trying to figure out how to integrate, or are we still hearing people worry about security when it comes to the cloud?
You know, performance rarely comes up, which has always surprised me. There are latency issues in some arrangements, but in general, people can kind of extract the kind of performance they want out of the cloud. Many people are accessing a cloud service provider over the internet, which is the slow way. If you want to do it faster, you can go out to your nearest telecom, your service provider, and ask, you know, run a private line. You already have your private wide area network running through their offices. Ask them for a private line connection to the cloud. And then Amazon, Microsoft, IBM will make that as easy as possible by having a service that you merely need to tell the connecting company, the hub. That might be your telecom provider. It might be an outfit like Equinix, or they have data centers. They connect readily to the cloud. It's an automated process. If you tell them what you want, they'll give you a private line connection, and the speeds of these things are better than the internet. The security is better, and the price is higher, but you're getting the kind of service that you want in terms of response times. So in general, the performance issue can be addressed a couple different ways, and mainly it is getting more to the integrated system, getting to a system that's available 24 hours a day from all different locations. Those kind of issues override the worry about performance or speed of response. Security remains a topic, but the realization, I think, is taking hold that whatever might be wrong with the cloud, it's probably also wrong with your own data center. And if anything, their dedicated teams and their uniform environment makes it easier to impose and police security in the cloud than you may be experiencing on premises. So I think there's a pretty warm debate over that issue now, and it's by no means resolved, always in favor of on-premises.
All right. Now, Charlie, you and I have each been around long enough. I've got a philosophical question to ask you. You talked about people who were resolving some of the both security and performance issues by getting to cloud services through what we used to call lease lines, basically through dedicated pipes that go through a service provider. If you're not using the internet, aren't we back to the old timeshare services? Is cloud one of these things that has now broadened itself past its original meaning? Or am I just being an old guy who remembers what things used to be called?
Kurt, you were a little broken up there, but I got your question as how's the cloud, is it relabeled time sharing or time shared services? My answer would be no. The cloud is something different. You have to think of the cloud not as simply a remote data center like a time shared service. The cloud is a different way of distributing compute cycles than we've had before. The end user can fire them up, can order them up, can configure, can get the kind of compute resources that he wants, usually from where he's sitting. With time sharing, all that had to be set up by agreement between two parties, and then once it was started, it ran. The end user did not decide to shut it down at 9 o'clock at night and turn it on again at 6 o'clock in the morning. In effect, we have the control has been handed off to the end user over those compute cycles, whereas with time sharing, you did own a slice of a computer and you had time on it and you had something running on it, but somebody else had to be there to make sure the thing was up and running, and you had to negotiate or you had to navigate any changes to that system through another human being, another party. At least that would be my understanding of old versus new. I'm curious, do you understand cloud and time sharing differently from that?
No, I think you're right. I think the interesting thing is that in the beginning, one of the ways that people were defining cloud is that it had to be accessed via some sort of commodity internet. And as you point out, the connection method really has dropped by the wayside. Now there's much more in terms of the dynamic building, requisitioning, and then tearing down of services that defined cloud entirely apart from exactly how you're getting there. So it seems to me that responsiveness is much more a definition of cloud today than how you're getting there.
I would agree with that. Kurt, again, you are a little broken up. Your voice is syllabic, and I'm missing a few things that you're saying, but it's sort of like you're on a cell phone with a weak battery, something like that. At any rate, yes, the other modern aspect of the cloud is that we're moving things around into and out of the cloud as sets of virtual machine files, and you can do that much more at will. You have the internet, you have as many mobile vantage points from which to see and manage things as you wish. And that's never been true before, and it makes the cloud a much more flexible, much more powerful and attractive environment for running what used to be traditional IT.
Well, I'd like to stay on the topic of the cloud, but shift venue just a little bit and go from this week's Oracle Open World to next week's Microsoft Ignite, which is going to be taking place in Atlanta. Now, under the leadership of Satya Nadella, Microsoft has become a cloud-heavy company. Charlie, I know that you tend to watch what's happening in the world of the cloud. Have you gotten any inkling about what might be ahead coming out of Microsoft Ignite?
Well, I'll tell you, Kurt, I stumbled out of VMworld in Las Vegas and stumbled into Oracle Open World a few days later, and I have not had a chance to zero in at all on Microsoft Ignite. What do you know about it?
Well, I think that what we're going to see is probably stuff coming out in several different arenas, but one of the things that I believe we're going to be seeing is a new emphasis on their hardware. And in doing that, it becomes not just a place for their embedded operating system and applications to reside, but really something that ties tightly into all of their cloud offerings, whether it's the Office 360 that's happening in the cloud, or as a client to applications and services that reside on Microsoft Azure, or even in a company's own on-premises cloud servers that are running a combination of Microsoft NT server or Windows server and Azure. To some extent, it seems to me that Microsoft, Apple, and Google are all playing variations on the same game, just with emphases that lie on different pieces of that game. What do you think? I mean, does that sound like a plausible set of things to look forward to from your perspective?
Yes, and I would agree. There are different emphases among the suppliers. Some of them are quite significant, and I, for one, would not minimize what it means to be in the Microsoft cloud if you are a Windows developer. There would be significant differences and advantages if you wanted to make use of Windows Server extensively instead of Linux, if you wanted to make use of System Center, Active Directory, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are, of course, integrated very tightly to operations in the Microsoft Azure cloud. So that you can kind of take a look at where a company is coming from and guess at some of its strengths. Microsoft as a Windows company is going to have a very Windows compatible cloud, obviously. What you say about hardware is interesting, and I don't know a lot about that. I'm curious what additional information might come out there. But Microsoft is showing that it's a pretty quick study when it comes to understanding what's new and different about the world of cloud computing and making it compatible for that huge customer base that they've already got. Doesn't mean that they're really breathing down Amazon's neck. Amazon has shown a great adeptness at producing new services on top of the infrastructure that it has invented and parlayed into a major $10 billion a year business.
You know, it's amazing to me that we can see a company having a $10 billion a year cloud business, especially one that only a few short years ago was trying desperately to pretend, they didn't feel like the cloud existed if you listen to them carefully, and they've certainly changed that tune. You know, one of the other things that is happening, and I find this really fascinating, later in the fall, in about 6 weeks, I'll be going down to Orlando for the Gartner Symposium and IT Expo. That's the big annual gathering of Gartner, the major market research and consulting firm here in the U.S. They get their employees and their customers together and pretty much take over one end of Disney World down in Orlando. But, you know, I wrote an article this week on one of their big pushes that started a couple of years ago, this whole notion of bimodal IT. And the selling point of bimodal IT is that you have two kinds of systems in an organization. Half of them are, if you will, legacy back-end systems, and the watchword there is stability and dependability, the predictability. In other words, those are very static systems. And then you have all of the customer-facing systems that have all the apps and deal with customer experience. Those are more fashion-driven and need to be very responsive and turning on a dime. And so in defining bimodal IT, they said you really should have two plans of attack, two staffs, two everythings, one to deal with the old-fashioned systems, one to deal with all of these nimble new systems. Charlie, when you were at Oracle Open World this week, did you hear a lot of people talking in ways that made you think that they're paying a lot of attention to these old, very static systems, or is the emphasis from pretty much everyone now on this new idea of a nimble, responsive infrastructure and IT organization, really from the customer-facing apps all the way to the back end?
Well, there is plenty of legacy system maintenance work, keeping the lights on and the servers running. There's still plenty of that to contend with in the world, but it seems to me everybody's focus is shifting into a more forward-looking stance where if they've got these systems now, they don't want to make any more of them. They want to get into a pattern of development and implementation that lets them get away from difficult shutdown time maintenance and get more into rapid updates and continuous delivery, continuous operation. And, of course, those are phrases that are very hard to implement. But I don't know how many people are kind of consciously dividing the world into a bimodal set of things, where they were going to organize their IT staff along those lines. The thing that I hear most frequently is that people wish those who are responsible for development would also take as much responsibility as possible for efficient operation. And it's kind of the DevOps concept, and trying to minimize the wall between those two things.
This sounds like a variation on an argument I used to have with my father-in-law, who was a civil engineer. His opinion was that all architects should be engineers, because he was tired of these architects going off and designing things that were borderline impossible to build. And so he felt like anyone who was designing a building should know what it took to build a building. And it sounds like what you're saying is that a lot of the folks out there who are running IT departments, the folks on the operational side, really wish that the people doing dev work and design work had a clue about what it took to bring those applications and those designs to life in the real world, that they feel like the world would be a happier place if there was more unity between those two. Is that the impression that you got?
Yes, I would say the same thing. It's a new set of disciplines, and to some extent the cloud becomes an incentive and even a whip to go there, because you're going to need to run things you're going to need to design and build them in a fashion that allows them to scale in the cloud. Which means you're likely to deploy them in the cloud. And if a IT shop were to adopt a set of disciplines around that prospective environment, limit the number of choices that can be made to those that work best in the target environment, then the gap between development and operations begins to close and resolve itself. Basically, I think as more and more of IT moves into the cloud, development gets closer and closer to operations.
Well, Charlie, I think that you and I are to be congratulated, because we have talked for nearly a half hour about cloud topics and did not once use the phrase shadow IT. So I think that we've managed to successfully bring some meat to the topic, and we'll probably have to make up for that by having an entire show on shadow IT at some point in the future. But we have in fact spent a half hour talking about the cloud and about some of the conferences where folks get together in the real world to talk about these things. Charlie, are you off again to another conference next week? What's coming up for you in terms of what we will be seeing from you on the electronic pages of Information Week?
Well, the next thing I'd like to turn to is a survey of SaaS implementers and what their kind of how some of their attitudes are changing, and what the thinking is among some of the major adopters. This was a survey done by Ernst & Young, now known as EY, and I spoke in particular to the head of their transaction advisory service. They simply they have some interesting findings on software as a service that I hope to be going over with readers next week.
We will look forward to that. And in terms of those readers, how can they keep up with you on social media to know when your great articles appear there at Information Week?
Well, of course, informationweek.com, and then at BabcockCW on Twitter.
Charlie, we really appreciate you being with us. And if you're listening and you're not following Charlie on Twitter, you need to as soon as this show is over, head over to Twitter, make sure and look him up, because his words of wisdom are well worth making part of your daily routine. Well, as for me, I spent much of this week in New Orleans at the Society for Professional Journalists conference, learning new tools, new techniques, getting all inspired. So we're going to try to see how many of those new techniques and new tools we can bring to bear on stories at Information Week in the coming weeks. Next week, I'm going to be heading to Orlando for the Splunk conference. As many of you know, Splunk is one of the real leaders in terms of analytics, taking log files, taking data from a bunch of different sources and helping people make sense of it. So I'm going to be going down there talking to a lot of their customers. And in the meantime, this week I had a chance to interview people from two organizations. One of them you've almost certainly heard of. That would be McDonald's. Yes, the hamburger people. And the other, the Chicago Board of Trade, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which is where you go if you need to buy wheat, corn, soybeans, milk, or pork bellies, among other things, in vast quantities. Talking to both of those folks about aspects of their IT operations, those will be coming up on podcasts and articles at informationweek.com in the coming week. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'd love for you to do that. You can find me at KG4GWA. Well, thank you for spending yet another half hour with us here on this Friday afternoon. If you're here with us live, thank you ever so much. We'd love to have your voice in the online conversation that happens alongside the radio broadcast. And if you're picking us up on a streaming or podcast version, thanks very much. But think about joining us every Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Well, for Charlie Babcock and everyone else here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks for being with us. See you next week.